There's definitely governing bodies that are helping to lift up more people. We have lots of programs, but at the end of the day, you know, we're South Africa is 98% BIPOC, and only, and of the 600 plus producers of wine, only 20 are BIPOC owned, and even less women.
Welcome to the Abwazi Wine Buzz podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Clinton Lee. There's a saying by Rudyard Kipling who talks about East is East and West is West, and never the twain shall meet. But there are exceptions. And in this particular case, it comes in the form of an adventurous lady who has traversed continents and countries. And with it, she brings her own very special, that I would term a je ne sais quoi. She is charismatic, interesting, as you will find out. So our guest today is Erica Taylor. Welcome to the show, Erica.
Thank you so much for having me. That was a great introduction. I feel like I should use it for my Tinder profile.
Well, you're looking energetic, and what I would like to say is there's obviously this enthusiasm bubbling over. So, Erica, your journey into the world of wine would perhaps be described as circuitous. Tell us how it all began.
Well, I was always a wine lover. My mom was a wine lover. I grew up going to the Destin Charity Wine Auction in America and drinking amazing wines. And I lived in New York City and would go, you know, have access to amazing wines, lived across the street from amazing little boutique wine shops. And then in 2011, I went on a holiday to India and fell in love with it and moved there 2 months later. And surprisingly, that's where I was exposed to a lot of South African wine. And my brain at that point didn't realize that there were obviously jobs in wine besides winemakers. And so I just kind of Googled around wine jobs, wine school, anything I could think of. And that's how I came along to WSET and decided to take level one just to see how I liked it, and fell down the rabbit hole very quickly and took 1, 2, and 3 all in the same year, all while moving across the world.
Well, I have to tell you, that is quite an accomplishment, because having studied and taught WSET myself, and now with Abwazi, we have our own educational programs, undertaking 1, 2, and 3 in 1 year, that would be a mammoth task. And I'm sure your mouth and certainly your tongue must be flapping after having tried all the different wines. So tell me, whereabouts in India, you know, were you?
So we first went on holiday. My mom was a Buddhist nun, and so she had studied in India in the 70s. And so we decided to go back to do the footsteps of the Buddha. So we went to where the Buddha was born, where he died, where he first taught, where he attained enlightenment, and just drank very interesting things along the way. I remember for her birthday, we drank some white mischief, which was some very dodgy vodka. And couldn't really find any wine, even though they were called wine shops. Wine is kind of a catch-all term for all things alcohol related there. So found some Sula where I could, which is the most recognized Indian wine brand. They have about 76% of the market share. And I fell in love with it. I just, energy, it was an assault on the senses. It was touch, taste, smell, sight, everything all at once.
So was there a central place in India where you were located, a particular city?
Yes, I was in Mumbai. I moved there from New York City. So at that point, I was in my mid-20s. I think I was just looking for the next, I just needed something bigger and better.
How and share with us, I mean, there must have been a huge culture shock for you. And, you know, when you were in Mumbai, how long did you have the privilege of staying in India?
I was there for 6 years. So I thought that I actually thought that I would be there forever. Was kind of in the process of potentially moving to Goa for a little bit more of a relaxed life towards the end of my trip. But again, before I discovered South Africa, but I was lucky enough that once I started studying wine, end of 2016, around 2017, we have an NGO that provides clean water for school children out in Nasik, which is the Napa of India. And on a chance, we were out there visiting and had time to go to lunch. And I ended up at lunch at Soma Vine Village, which is just behind Sula. And the owner was there and, you know, just, you know, being inquisitive, what was I doing there and how was I finding it? And I told him that I had recently taken WSET and that I wanted to work in wine. And he said, well, why don't you come work here? And I said, well, I'll need a place to stay. I'll need my house person will need a place to stay. I have a cat. And he said, it's fine. We have a house in the middle of the vineyard. We'll take care of everything. Just come work here. So that was on a Tuesday. I moved there on Thursday and started Sauvignon Blanc 2017 harvest on Friday.
That's what it's always, sometimes the wine gods have no plan and they suddenly let the showers of opportunity and chance shower upon you.
Exactly.
Now, you know, Erica, on the website Uncorkified, which is a marvelous and very attractive name, you mentioned places you've lived, like you said in this interview, New York City, Mumbai, and Cape Town. If you were to place them in positions of 1, 2, and 3, how would you rank them and why from a personal experience and viewpoint?
They all have their total own charm, but I always joke that I'm a stray and I found my forever home in Cape Town. So I would have to say that Cape Town is my number one for sure. The weather, the people, I get to live on the ocean and simultaneously look at the mountain. I'm 20 minutes from wineries and vineyards and just absolutely spoiled for choice when it comes to wine bars. We have one street, which has about 6 wine bars all within a 500 meter radius. So never in this town. And I would say that probably number 2 would be Mumbai. My heart, there is still a piece of my heart that is there. And I was meant to go back in 2020. We all know what happened with that. And I was meant to go back actually a few weeks ago and the powers that be were not pleased with that. So didn't make it back. I'll have to end of monsoon season. And then I would say New York number 3, only because it, you know, it's changed since the, in my opinion, since the, you know, roaring 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, all of my jobs became a pharmacy or a bank, couldn't just find those kind of like cool hole in the wall places anymore because they couldn't really afford it. And anybody who's ever lived in New York or been to New York, you know, you pay just to breathe the air there. So.
Of course. So, you know, I was expecting a stronger American accent and it seems that it's been diluted over the years and the territories have claimed their right to you.
That is, well, if you ask a South African, that's definitely not the case. They think that I have a very strong American accent. I like to think that I've kind of become an amalgamation of all the places that I've been. And, you know, living in India, you had to learn to speak enough Hindi to get by. So when I start speaking Hindi, I have a little bit of an Indian accent. When I say Afrikaans words, I try to have an Afrikaans accent. All my Afrikaans friends laugh hysterically because I can't get the khaz right. But yes, I also grew up all over America. So I have a very kind of nondescript accent in that way as well.
Well, as I said at the beginning of this interview, certainly adventurous. Now, having been to India myself several times over and enjoying the country, the people, Mumbai must have been an eye-opening experience. The sights, the flavors, the sounds of one of the world's most populous cities. Why did you decide to travel to Mumbai? I know you mentioned perhaps with your mother, but was there perhaps romance, business, or just pure curiosity?
I think it was pure curiosity. I joked with my mom that before we went, I thought I was going to get malaria and sold on the black market. And we ended up flying Air India. And I will never forget the second that the dirt and the dust and the smell hit me. Before I even got off the airplane, I was like hooked. And we traveled about, and we actually had only planned to spend a day and a half in Mumbai because everyone was like, it's so dangerous, it's so scary, don't go there. And so we were totally freaked out. And I was lucky enough to have an acquaintance from New York that had moved there for work. So he kind of took me out for the day and for the evening. And I just remember getting on the plane being like, this is it, this is where I'm supposed to be. And I flew back to New York and met all my friends and told them I'm moving to India. And they said, yeah, right, have some more wine. And then 2 months later, I made a plan and there I was.
So let's get this right. You went there with your mother the first time, who, you know, just to revisit as she's a Buddhist nun. And you spent some time with a friend in New York City who was in Mumbai at the time. And then you left and you went back after that visit, and then you decided to go out on your own again to stay.
Now, I went there 2 months later, and I booked a. You can't book a one-way flight. They want you to make sure you're going to come back. So I booked the first flight as long as I possibly could, which was 6 months, and stayed and got myself settled, applied for a different visa, went back to America, got that visa, and came back and got rid of my apartment in New York and just basically stayed the entire time when I went, after the second time I went back.
So Erica, you definitely have that chiseled determination and sort of relentless, I'm going to get it done attitude, which is...
I think I trust my gut. I trust my gut more than anything. And I always say that it wasn't a later in life thing. When I was looking for colleges to go to, we went and toured a bunch of schools, and I was kind of ambivalent as to where I wanted to go. And then I stepped foot on the campus that my family in Texas wanted me to go to, and I hadn't even thought of it. As soon as I stepped foot on the campus, I knew that's where I wanted to go, and that was the only school I applied to, and that was the school that I got into, and that's where I went.
So that's pure unbridled determination. So congratulations on that. Many people seek that. So well done, Erica. Now, you've been to many restaurant scenes. Tell us about the best restaurant experience in Mumbai that you had.
There are so many experiences. If you want fine dining, if you want street food on the side of the road, you can get absolutely anything. I think one of the top places that comes to mind is a place that's still there. It's called The Table, and it's downtown in Colaba. When they first opened, they had actually an American chef. He's actually since gone out and has his own restaurant, which I have not been to yet. And it's called, I believe, Americano. But The Table is just absolutely stunning, fantastic. They have sommeliers that work on the floor. The owners are, you can always find them there about, and they're probably booked every night solid. They're right by the gateway of India, and the food is just world class. It's fusion. No chicken biryani or vindaloos on the menu, but absolutely like exquisite food, and definitely one of the best wine lists that I've seen in India. But I haven't been back in 4 years, and I've heard a lot's changed. So that was my favorite restaurant. I think it was also just voted one of the top 100 restaurants in the world in the last few weeks, if I'm not mistaken.
So that is Mumbai. Now, what about in New York City? You know, focusing on New York, how did your wine experience, I mean, you know, what was it like for you there, and also the restaurant experience?
So the thing that I actually miss the most about New York, which I definitely didn't get and still don't get in Cape Town, was New York. You know, your houses are so small, your kitchens are small. You're not going to be cooking a huge feast. You have a small refrigerator to keep everything in any which way. So it's perfectly normal to pop down to the restaurant or bar down the road and have dinner by yourself at the bar. And I was lucky enough to live next to two such places, one called French Roast, which is no longer there, but one called Le Express, in the 20s, which has been around for ages and probably never going anywhere. And I was really able to explore food and wines by the glass. So, you know, chatting with the bartenders, becoming friends with them, you know, there's other like-minded people sitting at the bar, having meals by themselves. Oh, what are you drinking? What are you having? It was such an amazing conversation starter. And in Mumbai, you wouldn't really go to a bar by yourself. Here, I go to wine bars by myself, but that's because I know everybody. But if you were just, you know, person off the street, you probably wouldn't really go to a bar by yourself. So I do miss that aspect of it.
And South Africa is definitely different to Dallas, Texas, where you studied, right? And so coming
very much
to South Africa, why did you select South Africa as your next stop in your personal wine pilgrimage?
Well, it was actually thanks to the winemaker in India. He loved South African wine and told me how much he loved being there. And whenever we were at restaurants, we could find quite a bit of South African wine on wine lists. So it was something that I had access to. I also kind of thought, let me check off another continent and head there for my birthday. So my mom had moved out to the vineyard with me at that point. And so at the end of April, 2017, we went to South Africa for 5 days. And I know you'll be shocked to hear this, but we fell in love with it and I moved here.
Okay. So love certainly follows you everywhere you go, it would appear.
I don't think I'm ready for another move. I think I've had all my moves in my life. I feel like I'm fully settled.
Okay.
You feel, you know, you can't beat it being able to live in the city, be so close to wine. So
Eric, you know, currently Cape Town is home. Now, South Africa has had a legacy of segregation historically, known as apartheid. Many feel that era has moved, and there are those who feel it is still very present. What are your thoughts, industry in South Africa?
I think it's still, unfortunately, very much here. As much as we try to be inclusive and want to, there's definitely governing bodies that are helping to lift up more people. We have lots of programs, but at the end of the day, you know, we're South Africa is 98% BIPOC, and only, and of the 600 plus producers of wine, only 20 are BIPOC owned, and even less women.
And do you just see it in the wineries, or how about issues of, you know, within the Somalia community and generally the entire industry?
Well, I think that in the sommelier industry, we have some amazing sommeliers from Zimbabwe, actually, that have come down. And there's actually a documentary about them and their journey to taste and to go to the championship. And it's four somms that I'm happy to call friends myself. They've been really championing. They now, a lot of them have their own wine brands. And I think for people to be able to see, you know, these people coming from a totally non-drinking country, wine producing country, to then come to South Africa and just completely dominate and excel is fantastic. We're also, you know, working to get the entry level working hospitality staff to get certified as a introductory sommelier, to try and give them that bug that we have to just, you know, go down the rabbit hole of, you know, this, the wine world. If you, you know, study hard enough, it can take you all over the world. And so we have a lot of top psalms that have been able to show that and to put that on the stage. And so we are constantly driving for more and more inclusivity whenever possible, which is always possible. Yeah.
So one of the one of those four members is a gentleman by the name of Pardon Tuguza. And you know, we at Apwazi through him, and with the, you've heard of Black, I'm assuming, BLACC, which yes. is the Black Seller Club. So Apwazi offers annually 100 scholarships to them. For
yes,
them,
they have done a great thing for the industry. Yes,
and that's what we currently certainly this entire year. That's our support for them.
Amazing.
There still needs an enormous amount of, as I said, there are those that think there should be much more. Now, considering the world movement where more engagement, you mentioned, you know, 20 wineries were BIPOC. So with this worldwide movement where there's more engagement with the BIPOC community, and it's clearly happening, how far do you think Cape Town specifically, because that's where all the wine industry is engaged in, is really truly doing something to make a change?
Well, I think as a white foreigner, I'm probably the last person to speak to that situation.
No, but absolutely. We do have... On the contrary, if you don't mind me saying that, I think you are perhaps one of the better place to see, because you come with a new set of eyes. And
that could be true.
And you are really looking at a situation where you have not become less sensitive. You're seeing it with a totally new perspective. So your viewpoint is quite important, Erica. So how
well,
do you
think? We do have an amazing organization called the Wine Industry Transformation Unit, which is run currently by Wendy Peterson. And there they have initiatives all over the country to really elevate people of color and especially women. We've worked with her on quite a few projects. They've even opened a bar in Stellenbosch that is only selling women-owned wine brands and people of color. So she's done a lot to bring that into the industry. The other problem is, as I mentioned, 20 wine brands, but I don't think only one of those people actually owns the farm. So we still have a long way to go with regards to actual land ownership. Right now, people are buying in grapes and using co-ops. So that is something that is a much heated debate that I do not dare step my toe in too deep since as a foreigner.
Of course. Well, it's quite common all around the world that cooperatives purchasing of grapes to make the wine. That's very true. So, you know, let's move back to one of your wonderful cities that you've enjoyed. You've lived in diverse cities. Your experience has broadened. Now, what food would you suggest to those who intend to visit Mumbai and they are going to say, you know what, I would like to order a bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon with my meal? So which dish and why?
I think you might have to steer clear of Indian food with the Cab Sav. As you know, tannin and alcohol and do not go well with spicy food. I would veer to say that you can stay in the Cab family by switching to a Cab Franc. But I racked my brain thinking what possible dish that could be, and it's just the spiciness, and I love spice. So I'm also associate wine judge, so I have to be very careful that I take my spices down a notch before I'm judging, because if it's not burning my tongue, it's not hot enough. I could have the food.
There's different curries. I mean, you know, Madrasi curry, Gujarati, Punjabi, you know, Uttar Pradesh, they're all very different. So it's a vast country. Would you still say there's no Indian dish that you'd put with Cabernet Sauvignon?
Maybe it's just not the dishes that I eat, because I eat such spicy food. And also living in Mumbai, it's quite hot. So I preferred nice chilled white wines with my food. So Yeah, Cabs have with Indian food. I would love to actually hear from whoever is listening to this, what dish that they would pair. Because I can't imagine. Maybe I'll have to have a trial and error Indian food and Cab Sav tasting with some of my Som friends.
Okay. Well, moving on to that, tell us about Uncorkified.
So that came about quite randomly, actually. My previous life was fully in the public relations side of things. So my previous social media handles was Erica Taylor PR. And I was talking to one of my friends named Kristen when I first moved here. And I was like, you know, I'm in wine. I don't understand why no one's inviting me to these tastings. And she was like, well, your name is Erica Taylor PR. And a lot of these people inviting people are PR people. So they might not want to invite you if you're going to be coming after their business. So I, of course, hadn't thought about it that way. And I tried a few different options, you know, just the general Uncork with Erica or Fine Wine with Erica Taylor, and just nothing really quite seemed to fit. And after a few glasses of wine, right about to fall asleep, the word just popped into my head. And shockingly, because I made it up, it had not been taken yet. So I took it and it's become my brand.
And a marvelous and alluring name it is. I think it has that uniqueness to it. So well done on that, Erica. Now, in this world, there are many competitors. Who are your main competitors? And for any wineries listening now, you know, people involved with wineries, why should they select you as opposed to others?
So I think that I can't really say that I have any direct competitors. I mean, having so much foreign experience really kind of gives me another leg to stand on here. So I still represent clients in the US for the public relations market. I have a different eye as far as social media is concerned to maybe how have a broader spectrum of things. I also offer just a totally different array of services. If you want to do your own social media and just tell me just tell you what to do, then we do that. If you want me to just train you and your staff, then we do that. If you want me to plan tastings and events, then I'm great at that. If you want me to travel for you, I've got a really good passport. The South African passport is notoriously difficult for international travel. So yeah, I think that we all offer our own things. And at the end of the day, a lot of it comes down to personality. Who do you enjoy working with? Whose personality? Who do you want to grab a drink with at the end of a, you know, tough business conversation? So I think that has a lot to play into it, maybe even more so than actual skills.
So it's really about that relationship, the building of that bridge.
Yeah.
Vitally important. And that comes from words of experience and traveling the road. Wonderful. Now,
exactly.
You've tried so many foods, you've met so many people. Erica, your perfect pairing of food and wine, what would that be?
So I am obsessed with vino verde. Love the little spritz, love the low alcohol, love that I can have it at lunch. And honestly, that's on a summer's day with a prawn salad and this very special dressing that I make. That's not really that special, but it's just
tell us about your dressing. Come on.
It's just basically a mix of every seasoning that I have in my seasoning drawer with a little olive oil and lemon and with some perfectly cooked prawns and mixed greens. And that with a vino verde while I'm sitting on my balcony watching the waves in the ocean is my favorite thing ever.
It's a tough life that you live out there from the sounds of it.
It is. It's, well, to be fair, it's raining today. So, you know, it does happen sometimes, but no, it's absolutely stunning. And the people are incredible and an amazing sense of humor. And just anybody who comes here, especially, we are just completely spoiled. The wines are totally affordable for the incredible value that they are. And that was one of the things that totally sucked me in as well.
So I was at a event recently, and one of the questions posed to me was, it's your last meal, and we're not talking the main course, we're talking about the entire, you know, perhaps 6-course meal, and no limits, any restaurant you want to be transported to, and any wine you want. How would that come up on your menu? What would you select?
Okay, well, if I only have to have one wine, I feel like that's not fair for my last.
No, you can choose as many wines as you like. But what would you start off with?
I would have to start off with some Cremant de Loire to get the party started. But then I really would probably come back to South Africa for my mains. And I'm so thankful that I moved to a place that's so well known for Chenin, because I have discovered my top 3-4 favorite Chenins here. Kopsik 1947 is absolutely incredible. Bossman, Optenhorst, Sadi, Mev Kirsten, and actually by the same place is Bosporod by Paul Jordan out in the Swartland. So if I had all the budget in the world, I would probably buy those 4 wines.
Okay, all right.
And I don't care if I'm eating a burger. I don't care if I'm eating pasta. I would it's eat those with that. Yes.
Well, Erica, I'll ask my last question to you would be, where do you see yourself in 10 years' time?
I think that in 10 years, I would like to be a Master of Wine student. I don't know if I will be full Master of Wine yet, since I feel like I got started a little bit late in life. But if not that, I'm hoping to do diploma in the next couple of years. I'm a little bit chicken. So for right now, I'm taking French Wine Scholar, Italian Wine Scholar, and Spanish Wine Scholar before I feel like I'm ready for diploma. So I feel like I would be maybe an MW student. And if not, then my ultimate goal is for people to fly me around the world so that I can teach other people about the wonders of South African wine. So hopefully 10 years from now, I'll be on a plane heading off with my case of wines to teach other people about South African wines.
Well, Erica, I think you'll be a wonderful ambassador for your newly adopted country of South Africa. And they're very fortunate to have you there. It's been a real pleasure interviewing you. And thank you for sharing with us the insights, the excitement, the hustle, the bustle of the food and the flavor. I can just hear it coming out of your voice, you know, and it's just been wonderful. Thank you very much indeed. And I hope that we have the opportunity one day to get together and enjoy a glass of wine. You've been listening to Wine Buzz Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, then please leave a review or share it with a friend. Abwazi is an online wine and spirit institution dedicated to promoting culture and diversity through the world of education. If you're looking to get started, we have a free online course that we are giving out to all our listeners. For more information, head to abwazi.com. That's APWASI.com.